Working Cows Podcast, Episode 39.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Today on the Working Cows Podcast, I'm excited to welcome Josh Lafers. Josh is a range ecologist with the Audubon Society. He's been in that role for a couple of years. He spent some time with the South Dakota Soil Health Coalition and has been involved in different things with the South Dakota Grassland Coalition. And we are talking about a market approach to certifying ranches as producing bird-friendly meat, essentially, and using that as an opportunity to have an inroads to the market and more conscious consumers. So really interesting and exciting stuff. And I want to get you right into this interview with Josh Lafers. So Josh, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me on today, Glenn. Really excited to be here.
Josh, it's good to have you on. And we are sitting down to talk today about the organization that you are a part of, the Audubon Society. Specifically, you're part of the Ranching Initiative, or how do you guys refer to that?
So we refer to it as the Audubon Conservation Ranching Program, which is our working lands program in the grassland here in the United States.
And what is the goal of the Conservation Ranching Program?
Well, what we're really trying to do with the Conservation Ranching Program is affect grassland bird populations at scale. You know, the Audubon Society really protects birds in the places they need throughout the Americas, and we're doing that through science, advocacy, education, and on-the-ground conservation. And the Conservation Ranching Program really sits pretty squarely in on-the-ground conservation, protecting grasslands.
So what is your day-to-day task list include?
So I work as a range ecologist, so I'm working with producers. I go out and meet with them, and we talk about, you know, bird habitat, how to replace the grazing practices. And, we work on developing habitat management plans and trying to get that rancher to the point where they can actually be enrolled in the program. And the Conservation Ranching Program is unique in that it's really trying to bring those conservation and ecological benefits, trying to put a value on them in the marketplace where there's a certification available and consumers can go out and they can purchase products with this certification and help provide additional income to the ranch through those purchases and help to support conservation in the marketplace.
Very cool. I'm a pretty big fan of the free market, and so I'd like to camp out there a little bit if we can. The idea that you guys are providing a market incentive for both the consumer and the producer to change their habits, whether it's their grazing habits or their eating habits, ironically. So I guess what does that process look like for somebody, say somebody who's been in a conventional set stock grazing pattern, and then audit, they say, hey, we got profitability issues, we got runoff issues, we want some help, and the Audubon Society comes in and says, we're going to get you guys certified with the Audubon Society. What does that process look like?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we're looking at a traditional set stock system, we're probably going to be looking at a way to break that ranch into at least a couple of parcels and implement some rotational grazing. The biggest part of loading native species and the vigor of the native grass to allow them to rest during growing season. And, you know, typically what we see under kind of a set stock situation is the most palatable grass emerges first, and everything else is just left to grow. So there and look at promoting the shipgrass kind of diversity species. We're going to look at some sort of a rotation. And it doesn't have to be, initially, it doesn't have to be really intensive. Even a few paddocks is a great way to start. And then as we see success, and usually as the ranchers see the benefits of that kind of system, they're interested in trying to more and breaking up into additional paddocks. Of course, there's challenges, infrastructure challenges with providing your ranch in the whole paddocks. That's what we're here to help with as well.
And what is some of that help that you guys are offering? Just like strategic help, and this is some of the best practices, or what is the help that you guys offer?
Right. Yeah, so that'd be accurate. We're offering, you know, technical assistance, just helping them to look at the land ecologically, where's the best place to put a fence to minimize, I guess, disturbance to wildlife. How do we place water? And then we also connect them with conservation program. You know, we're pretty excited to work with the NRCS and some of their programs that they have for cost share and other organizations. So we do have some funds that voted as well to promote those sort of infrastructure development. But primarily so far, for me at least, it's been just on the technical assistance side of, you know, looking at the landscape and talking through where's the best place to put a fence? And that's usually a give and take. Granted, that's not me coming in and saying, oh, this is where you should put it. And, you know, let's take into account all the different facts of your operation, environmentally, socially, financially, what's feasible here. Does what works for one rancher won't work for another rancher? And I've seen that over and over again. Some people really like temporary fencing, and that way at the end of the year they can roll it up, and their pastures are nice and big. There's a lot of flexibility to adjust to changing conditions. Some people absolutely can't deal with temporary fencing because of, you know, antelope or other wildlife. It's very, very hard on that. And some plants just don't lend themselves well to temporary fencing. So then we're looking at usually a little bit more permanent fencing. And when you're dealing with permanent fencing, typically you're going to look at a larger paddock because of infrastructure costs and water availability issues. So
we've come in, we've chopped up this ranch into some smaller paddocks, and now we're moving forward through this process of certification. What comes next?
We probably look at now how are we going to manage this so that we get the benefit we are expecting. We can't just put up fences and kind of ignore the management side of this. So that's where the habitat management plan comes in. We talk about how do we manage things like riparian areas, things like the grazing system to get the best benefit for wildlife. You know, again, within the context, understanding that we live in South Dakota, droughts are going to come, floods are going to come, things are going to happen. But at least if we have a goal, usually we rate those on a 3-year basis. So what do we want the ranch to look like in 3 years? So we developed that habitat management plan, got the infrastructure in place, and then we move forward with connecting with another third party, and then we can actually certify the ranch as being bird-friendly. Once the ranch is certified as bird-friendly, those products from that ranch are eligible. Feed products are eligible for being sold as Audubon Conservation Ranching feed, where a consumer can find that feed in the marketplace, and it'll have feel on the packaging feed, actually.
And where are you seeing these products go to market? I mean, are they in more metropolitan areas, or how is that looking?
Yeah, so there's, you know, the nice thing about our world today is that there's all kinds of ways to sell a product. We have individuals selling products online where it can be sold, you know, coast to coast. And we're just very much in the beginning stages of developing marketplace for this, so it's kind of early there. We have some that are selling kind of locally here in the Dakotas, and some of maybe the smaller grocery stores in Rapid City, Falls, Bismarck, some of those smaller outlets, but, nationwide, there's definitely a lot of interest from different supply chain personnel to develop a program here where, we can do direct consumer online sales, or we can look at connecting with branded programs where we're selling, across the United States grocery stores. So it's not really a one-size-fits-all. There's options there, and we're willing to, as I talked about, with producers, with supply chain people, about what works best for them, and try to make it work out for everyone. Because not everyone, not all consumers buy food the same way. Not all ranchers ranch the same way. So it's hard to put it into a box of what's the best way to work for everyone.
Sure. And where is the conservation ranching program on the ground? Where are you guys working at as far as states and different things like that?
Right. So we're just moving out of the pilot phase here. So we're really heavily focused on the Great Plains. So you're talking North and South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado, Nebraska, and then down New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri. Try and connect just that middle part of the country, Great Plains, because that's really where we've seen the greatest threat to lawn grassland. And, because we're a bird conservation organization, the loss, the steep decline in grassland bird conservation is pretty concerning. That's why we have focused on that landscape, and we're partnering with ranchers in that area.
And what are some of the threats to the loss of these grassland habitats?
So, it's not just loss of, but we've got loss of habitat for a number of reasons. One of them would be, of course, inversion to row cropping or annual cropping. Typically, we see that as a result of just a lack of profitability or change in management where a new owner doesn't really care to run cattle. So trying to change that perception of not profitable front cows. Of course, you're familiar with Dave Pratt. You've had him on the show, and the whole idea of ranching for profit is an oxymoron. we don't really support that view of the ranching industry. I guess we really think the ranching industry is profitable. But that's that's one loss. I guess is the annual cropping. There, of course, a loss to energy development or urbanization, I guess, or residential areas where, as a city grows, it'll start to move out. People will want their 20 or 40 acre country. Typically, selling a ground for small ranches is profitable money for cattle. And, so you kind of lost your habitat value there. Really divided it up into a bunch of small fragments. A couple of houses and trees there, and it's just not as valuable as it was before. And then the other thing we see is just it's incompatible grazing, where, invasive species, in the Northern Great Plains, we have a couple of them, smooth roam being one of them. Eastern red deer is really making a move in here in south central South Dakota, and those species don't provide the quality habitat need for grass. For a number of reasons. So those are a few of the threats that habitat, I guess, locally, nationally, probably less even more. But
let's camp out there on profitability for just a second. What are you guys doing to, I don't know, what's your first battle? Is it convincing the ranchers that there's a more profitable way, or do you wait for them to reach out to you? What does that relationship look like?
Yeah, so I think most ranchers that work with realize that there's a better way. There's definitely a more profitable way. And many of them have taken steps to, develop these ranges and are already seeing the added benefits of that. And when it comes down to it, I think our biggest challenge at this point is, going into the marketplace. This particular program and convincing, getting consumers on board that either ecological benefits to having cattle out on land, and you know it really worth their money to support that and to be part of the program for your purchase.
Sure. What is that side of is that also part of Audubon's work, is to educate consumers?
So that's kind of an ongoing effort. We have a number of materials that you spend in Rapid City. We have billboards up there where the conservation ranching program has a lot of benefits there. Nationally, we've promoted it to our just over a million members through social media and the Audubon magazine. And so we've been, you know, we've been taking a number of different approaches to kind of educate consumers. And the last I heard, I just heard last week that someone has to hear something 11 times before they accept it or do something about it. It used to be 7, so apparently we're more distracted than it used to be. So I think it's definitely kind of an ongoing effort to get people to understand what the true value of what they're buying into is, not just a pretty little label on a package. There's a lot of on-ground conservation behind it.
Very cool. I suppose there has been some hesitancy on the part of ranchers to partner with an organization like the Audubon Society. What has changed in the recent past as far as the Audubon Society or I guess the relationship that they have been seeking out with ranchers? What led to this idea that we could provide a product to the market that was certified, and how has that process been playing out?
So I think if you look historically, and it's not specifically to the Audubon Society, but certainly a number of conservation organizations had a little bit of an arm's length relationship with ranchers, and it's because probably just the understanding of how the grassland and range land system work, and just historically some of the grazing systems haven't been very compatible with good wildlife habitat. So you see kind of the conservation groups and ranchers at odds with one another over what's the best way to manage range land. But then the flip side of that is, as some of these rangelands weren't managed, the habitat degraded just as quickly, or even to a greater extent. And very quickly it became obvious that, you know, grasslands need grazers, and we need to be supporting having those grazers on land. And if they don't, they're probably going to get used for another purpose, and those other purposes typically aren't conducive for grassland bird population either, whether that be annual cropping or being taken over by invasive species, or even just native forest species. You know, typically when we think of birds, we think of trees, that's what birds need, but there's a lot of birds that don't want to be anywhere near a tree. They really need those wide open grassland spaces to save their life cycle.
It's really cool to me to see this kind of aha moment on both sides of the fence, so to speak. Ranchers who are realizing that these birds aren't necessarily competitors, or these, you know, wildlife in general aren't necessarily competitors. They're kind of a compliment to the fact that I'm doing something good on the landscape, that they want to be here too. And, you know, also on the conservation side, that when those producers are doing something good on the landscape, it's good for the things that we're trying to conserve as well. Is that an accurate assessment of kind of how this whole thing's played out?
Yeah, I think you're right on. I think quite often we tend to devalue what wildlife does on our operation. I think that can actually come into play on all of our ranches. As we see a lot of these birds, they eat insects, whether that be grasshoppers or otherwise. You know, eating our forage, eating our cattle, they eat flies. There's a lot of, additional benefit to having that wildlife, especially those birds on your ranch. And a lot of times you just kind of undervalue what contribution you give.
Yeah, well, and this year, especially in western South Dakota, we've been exceptionally wet. You see the cows balled up in the corner of the fence, you know, all plagued by flies, and everybody, you know, I only saw a couple of places yesterday in my drive through a good chunk of western South Dakota that weren't balled up in the corner, plagued by flies, you know, and stuff like that. So if there's something that we can do on a natural basis that's not going to impact the soil health or the soil microorganisms, you know, that's going to benefit actually those things, then by all means, I think that most people would be open to doing something like that and to helping out their cows and their soil and all those things. So what are the actual mechanics of what's going on the land? What are the cows doing for the land to help it be more attractive to birds and different things like that?
Well, they're doing a lot of things. And you actually did it pretty well in terms of the greater environmental benefits of, you know, grazing and using a more natural approach. There's a number of products out there that you can use to help control flies. And some of them are pretty difficult to apply if your cattle are out in pasture. That provides a set of challenges. Additional negative impact is, dung beetles, which are helping you cycle nutrients, and other soil microorganisms. And so, you know, when we're looking at cattle moving across the land, what benefits they offer to the land, in terms of grassland birds, but also to the greater ecosystem, you know, a grassland was really developed and it was created to be grazed. Grasses that aren't grazed really lose their vigor over time. You see that, depending on where you're at, you might see you start to move in and really start to dominate where you lose grassland and it's more of a shrubland. They provide not only that grazing to remove the old growth and provide sunlight down to the growth point, they provide trampling to help cover the soil with more grass left, and then with their, dung and urine, they're fertilizing it. And so it comes back to kind of the whole savory concept of, animal impact, improving just overall ecosystem processes and, soil, mineral cycling, water cycling, community dynamics, just improving the overall function of the ecosystem if they're managed right. If they're managed poorly, then they're going to, spread out and eat only their favorite plants, and they'll take the same paths over and over again, which tend to get then impacted. You start to see kind of a negative suite of impacts versus when they're managed more holistically, then you can see a lot of additional impact beyond just the increase in forage.
What is kind of how long has the ranching program, the conservation ranching program, been on the ground?
So we actually certified our first ranch about a year and a half ago. So it's very new. I'd say relatively new, but we're up to about 15 ranches nationwide, probably about the same number coming on online within the next year. So we're continuing to grow, and I think our biggest hold up again is the marketplace time. How do we give conservation value in the marketplace to get consumers to pay for it? But the idea, the concept, probably started about 6 or 7 years ago, and it was just a case of being pretty strategic in how the program was put together, meeting with ranchers, getting their input. How are we going to actually make this work so that it works not only for ranchers but for consumers and really have meaningful impact out on the land?
What's your history? How did you come to be part of the conservation ranching program?
So I just have a small ranch here in South Central South Dakota. I like to call myself average. The average, last I checked, the average U.S. cow herd was just under 40 head. That's about where I'm at. But I've really been interested for a number of years in regenerative grazing. First year, Dave Brown is someone that I'm pretty fond of and stuff that he does. But I first heard him about 7 years ago and was really just impressed by the results that he had obtained. At the time, I was, I guess, working for another organization. So started doing some of the things that, you know, Alan Tabery, Dave Brown, some of these regenerative grazers talked about, started doing some of it on my land, seeing the positive impact, trying to apply it from there. And then not too long, well, right before I worked for the Ottawa Society, I was working for the Council of Soil Health Coalition, and seeing the benefits there of grazing practices, getting cattle on the land. You know, in that situation, we're talking quite a bit about cover crops, getting cattle onto cropland, but also the soil health benefits of cattle management on rangeland. And so my history kind of comes from, you know, wildlife. I have a history in wildlife, but I also have a lot of history in agriculture and soil health. And a lot of it is just really interesting to me, and I love to learn new things. And, you know, I don't know that I've been to a ranch yet where I haven't learned more from the rancher that I'm meeting with than I have, you know, brought to the table. So it's kind of the benefit of being in the position I'm in. I really get to go out and meet a lot of really smart people and learn from them.
So what kind of practices did you implement on your own place back when you had heard from Gabe Brown and some of those others?
Well, that's an ongoing process of, you know, what I'm learning on a yearly basis. Probably the biggest thing that I've learned is to pay attention and to, you know, try new things. So, you know, I do the temporary fence and I do moves, regular moves, sometimes daily earlier in the year. This time of year, it's probably closer to weekly, just because the grass growth has slowed down. Trying to just monitor all the time grass regrowth. And so the biggest thing, I guess, is the regular movement, paying attention to the grass growth and how that can influence, you know, when I'm grazing and when I'm not. One of the big things I've actually done is that I've started grazing earlier on some of my invasive species, so I may be trying to hit that brome, target that brome in April versus waiting until middle of May or first of June to turn out when that brome has already started to go to seed. You know, there's a lot of things. I mean, it's hard to limit what I've implemented, but certainly just an ongoing process of learning and continuing to watch what's happening on the land.
Have you been able to see that brome be reduced in through implementing those practices?
Yeah, so I haven't done a really good job of, you know, like methodical, I guess, surveys or keeping track of them go to point. So I've started doing that a little bit better with go to point. Just looking, I would say I have more native species now. Just actually yesterday we were out and noticed a couple of new native flowers that I'd never noticed out on our ranch before. And because I am kind of a grassland vegetation person, I really enjoy finding it. The fact that I'd never seen it before probably means that it wasn't there necessarily, that I just hadn't seen it. So we definitely are seeing some of those native species start to make a return. And the whole system really, really starts to see the benefits. Then, you know, we see more insects, more birds, and bees, and that sort of thing. I do know, you know, I keep track of my forage yield every year, how many cattle I have out. I have increased my total capacity on the property that I rent by about 25% over the course of 6 or 7 years. Which I think is, you know, it's not as significant what some people talk about, where they're talking 200%. But when you consider that, so that was during the course of a couple of dry years, I think that's also pretty significant, that I have seen an increase. and you know.
Sure. What's that relationship with your landlord look like, given the increase?
Yeah, so it's a really good opportunity for me to just talk with them about, you know, why we're doing what we're doing. It is for, you know, wildlife benefits. He does, our landlord really enjoys pheasant hunting, and has, you know, some kids and grandkids that has come out to do some pheasant hunting. So we're definitely looking at it from a wildlife standpoint there. But it also is, you know, it's nice for them to be able to look across their pasture and see that, hey, there's more grass this year than there was last year. Also, it's really hard to tell incrementally from one year to next that, oh, I see there's 5% to 10% more grass. When you can sit down at the end of the year and show that, hey, this is the additional productivity, and yet you can look out there and I still have plenty of residual for covering soil, for catching snow, and they can really see that there's these compounding benefits. I think that's a really important way to just kind of involve them and make sure that he and they are aware of what we're doing and why we're doing it. It's for multiple benefits, I guess, for him and for us.
Very cool. Josh, I appreciate your time today. I'd like to give you an opportunity to share with people how they could get in touch. Say it's a rancher that wants to partner with the Audubon Society or any of those kinds of things. Where would people go to get in touch with the Audubon Society?
So if you want to visit the conservation ranching website, it is audubon.org/ranching. If they want to get a hold of me directly, probably the best way is by email. And that is jleffert@audubon.org. That's jleffert@audubon.org.
Okay. We will put all those things in the show notes page, workingcows.net/39. You'll be able to find some of those links at workingcows.net/39. Any other resources you'd like to see there?
I think that'll do it. If people are interested, they can check out the website or get a hold of me, and I point him in the right direction.
Did I miss anything? Any questions you wish I would have asked you today?
No, I think we've covered it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate your time today. Josh did reach out to me later after we had chatted, and he wanted to say that he thought that it was a paradigm-challenging practice to have conservation groups want to partner with ranchers and see them succeed in their businesses. It's not common that that happens, but it might get overlooked sometimes in these conversations because Josh has been working with conservation groups for so long that he's been seeing these different conservation groups that are interested in working with ranchers. Coming up later this week, we were behind. I went to Cedar Canyon Bible Camp and spent the week there directing the teen camp, 13 to 19-year-olds, put in a bunch of 16 to 18-hour days in a row, and just didn't get all my files in one place to get the podcast out to you last week. So we're releasing a couple episodes this week. Coming up next, we have a episode with Luke Perman, kind of a part two from my discussion with his dad about the succession management planning that they are going through there. So be on the lookout for that episode releasing real soon if it isn't up already.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.